Yeah, man.
That's correct.
Every Saturday night, usually after 10:30, we'll jump in and do some movie reviews. Colin Suter and Eric Childress from eFilmCritic.com are regulars on my show. We review the movies every Saturday night. And if you have movie questions, it's 312-981-7200. You can follow along at Facebook.com/NickDShow, which is, in fact, the best place that you can hang out with us. And by the way, if you've not seen the posted mugshot of the week from our Drunks of the Week, Drunks in the News, you need to check it out. It's at Facebook.com/NickDShow. All right, well, let's get the guys on. Here is Colin. Hello, Colin.
Hello there.
And here is Eric. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
All right, now, have you guys heard that I've still not seen Dawn?
No. What happened?
I got sick yesterday, and I had to eat, I had to eat the cost of the tickets too. I didn't have time to go today, but I'm going tomorrow. So anyway, I'm still excited to see it. Very excited to see it. And you guys can tell me about it and you guys can review it a little bit later on. But we weren't on last week. At this time last week, I was walking I was walking about 4.5 miles from the space on Northerly Island after seeing Dave Matthews. Have you guys either been to that place?
Never have.
No.
It's the venue's okay, but to get to it, what a pain in the neck. Oh, it's a pain. It's right next to the Adler Planetarium. So,
hey.
First of all, I jumped in a cab. Guy takes me there, and then I'm walking down the harbor area, and I realize that I'm below. I should be up on the street level. And I'm not kidding when I tell you it was like a 4.5 mile walk each way.
Yeah, once you get into that museum campus, any walk just seems to take forever, no matter where you're headed.
It's insane. It was absolutely insane. Concert was fantastic. By the time we got in and the show started, it was great. But, man, getting there and leaving, especially leaving, because it was like a three-hour concert. And then, you're standing the whole show. And then I walk 4.5 miles to get to the red line at Roosevelt.
Yeah, that's the area of Chicago where MapQuest and your GPS just gives up.
Oh, yeah. Because I tried to do that. My tablet, I was like, okay, what's the best way to get there? And they're like, I don't know.
Right.
Good luck.
Yeah, just try left.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, we weren't on and some movies came out last week. And why don't we start with one that I saw. And Eric, I understand that you saw Tammy as well.
I did.
All right. Why don't you tell us about Tammy?
Okay, Tammy is the latest film starring Melissa McCarthy. This one she co-wrote with her husband, Ben Falcone, played the air marshal in Bridesmaids. And he also directed the film. This is a directorial debut. And she plays Tammy, who works at the fast food place, but not for long. She shows up late, gets fired, goes home, finds out her husband, fiance, boyfriend is cheating on her. And so she leaves and decides to go back home. Her mother is played by Allison Janney. Her grandmother, get this, her grandmother is played by Susan Sarandon. I think they're all about like 15 years apart, all of them.
Yeah.
She decides to take a road trip with her grandmother, who has just got a stockpile of cash on her. And through this road trip, they're going to discover themselves and get away from their bad lives and whatnot. If you think there's not much to Tammy, there really certainly isn't in terms of plot. If you think that there's going to be laughs to be had during Tammy, you'll be even more sorely mistaken. As films go, this is the worst film I've seen all summer, without question. It is one of the most ineptly made debuts I've seen in some time. There's hardly even a structure to this movie. There's some people trying to harp on the idea that there's some heartfelt moments between Tammy and her grandmother. They must have seen a director's cut because I certainly did not see it. It's remarkable that, Melissa McCarthy, face it, needs to find a new character.
Yep.
She's been playing this character now, since Bridesmaids. And we saw it didn't work at all in Identity Thief, and that was when she was paired with Jason Bateman. It did kind of work with the Heat because she had someone to play off with Sandra Bullock. Here she's got nobody to play off of, and she's still playing that character, and it's incredibly annoying. It's incredibly off-putting. It's not funny in the slightest. And even though it's kind of worked on Saturday Night Live here and there, she needs some new shtick because she cannot continue doing this, and she needs to not have her husband direct her in any more movies.
He's directing her next one.
Is he really?
Yeah, they're co-writing it together. They're co-writing it together, and he's directing it.
Oh, we should skip. Let's just skip over that one and go to the Heat 2, whatever she's got coming up next. Because I was stunned how bad this movie was.
Yeah, it was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. And I don't think there's one laugh in it.
There's not.
I don't think I laughed once during the entire movie.
Nope.
And she has turned into a one note performer. I mean, it's the same shtick over and over and over again, and you're absolutely right. And I was just stunned at how bad it was, and there is no structure to it. It's a complete mess. I mean, the casting of Susan Sarandon is absolutely ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand the Kathy Bates character at all. I didn't know what the hell was going on there.
Yeah, a bohemian lesbian played by Kathy Bates.
Yeah, I don't even, you know. You want to see her? You want to see her play an interesting lesbian? Rent Primary Colors.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. So anyway, there's not one laugh in it, and it just goes, and it seems to go on forever, even though it's like 90 minutes long.
Yeah,
but because it's just so bad. By the way, the next one that they're doing is let me see. The next one is St. Vincent, so that's not the one. It's called Michelle Darnell.
Okay.
And Falcone's directing it.
Oh, God.
And it's due to come out at the end of 2015. Yeah.
Okay. So, well, people keep going to see it. They'll keep making those movies, and she'll keep playing that character. So,
people. I texted you after I saw it.
Yes, you did.
And my quote was, Tammy is so bad, it makes Identity Thief look like Lost in America.
That sums it up.
That's pretty much how bad Tammy is. So
yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk more about some of the stuff that came out last week, and then the guys are going to review the Apes movie, which they've seen and I haven't because I was sick. So, but I'm seeing it tomorrow. All right, we'll take a quick break. It's Movie Reviews here on 720 WGN. Yeah, the weekly movie reviews are happening right now. Colin and Eric are with me, Nick DiGilio. We are live in the Allstate Studio, Showcase Studio, overlooking Wet Michigan Avenue right here. And if you have a phone call, movie-related, 312-981-7200. Comment, review of your own. All right, let's get back to the phones. Here is Colin.
Hello.
And here is Eric.
Hello.
All right. Let's see. From last week... Colin, why don't you tell us about Earth to Echo?
All right. Well, this is a found footage film, and the footage is made by three kids, all of whom will be forced to move out of their suburban cul-de-sac to make way for development, kind of like the Goonies. But they suddenly all receive these encrypted messages on their cell phones, and they realize that it's some kind of map in their area. And, of course, just like Explorers, there's one kid who's smarter than the other two, and he's also the fat kid who they call Munch. And he's the one who figures all this stuff out. And they set out to find... what's going on, and they come across a piece of metal that they eventually learn is part of an alien, and eventually they find the whole alien, and they name him Echo. This thing doesn't speak much. It just doesn't speak at all, really. It just kind of flies around, looks cute, and collects metal, presumably to help put together its spaceship, so it can go back home. And the government, of course, gets wind of the boy's findings, and they try to take the alien away from them, just like in E.T. So, yeah, this is a movie that is on, you know, its own nostalgia kick, which I would be okay with were the movie not so stupid, badly acted, and horribly made. It's stupid because the alien is, much like Mac of Mac and Me, completely unengaging, and exists only to be cute. We're supposed to feel sadness when it, you know, almost dies. Well, sorry, spoiler alert.
People but, must have known that that's going to happen at some point.
Yeah, no, I know that. No, I'm kidding. But, so you're supposed to feel sadness at this moment, but you only see, the alien really only has about 2 or 3 minutes of screen time total in this thing. So really, who cares? Let it die. It's a poorly acted film. I hate to be too harsh on child actors, because it might not be their fault. But they are bad performances here, and, you know, they've been given bad dialogue to say and probably didn't do much in the way of rehearsals with them, I'm guessing, the way it looks like. They aren't natural, and, you know, for a found footage film, everything has to be, has to look, you know, realistic, more so than, you know, a regular narrative. So they're not natural, and their chemistry is really forced. And there's actually a fourth kid, a girl, who comes in later. One of the kids is African-American. He has a crush on her, but the movie just sort of gutlessly sidesteps the possibility of an interracial relationship between these two. That might have made the movie a little interesting. And the main kid smiles so much at the camera. He should really be on the cover of, like, a tween mag, you know, smiling pretty, but not acting. It's a really poorly made found footage film because no way do you believe that these little cameras could last all night long like the movie tries to get you to believe. The whole thing takes place over the course of 24 hours. You also don't believe the ways in which the filmmakers here try to think up excuses for why the cameras would be rolling. One of the things that drives me nuts about a lot of found footage films are like the smooth tracking shots that these characters always get when they're running with a camera in hand.
Right.
I don't think so. This is all around a bad movie, and I can't really even recommend it to parents, which is too bad because there's not a lot of choices out there, but this is not a good film.
The Dragon movie's out there.
Oh, that's right. Yes, the Dragon movie is out there. You should all go see the Dragon movie because it didn't make enough money, so everybody needs to go support that.
I saw the trailer for this thing, and I was kind of flabbergasted at how horrible it looked. Because I just was just like, what the hell is this? I mean...
Well, I mean, I give it a chance because it's on the same kind of nostalgia kick, I guess, it's the movies that I grew up with, and, you know, so you always hope that somehow they're going to do some justice to that. I think J.J. Abrams did a much better job with Super 8. I think that's a much, much better film. I know you weren't crazy about it, but man, when you watch Earth to Echo, I think you realize maybe you're a little too harsh on Super 8.
All right, well, I'm not going to watch Earth to Echo, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, I know you
won't. All right, you guys, hang on. We got to do some commercials, and we got to do the news, and we'll come back. And we got the Apes movie to review, and maybe one or two from last week as well, since we were off. Quick break. The news is coming up. Yeah, man. Nick DiGilio here, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. It's pouring out now on Michigan Avenue. It's coming down real good.
Told you so.
Yeah, well, of course, because I'm gonna be off in 20 minutes, and it'll still
be
pouring.
You predicted it.
Yep. There's not one cab on Michigan Avenue with his lights on. Not, I mean, his light, meaning I'm, my cameras.
Meaning they're available, right.
Yeah, right.
But they're all being used right now.
Well, yeah, because it's pouring. Nobody's going to walk.
I thought you brought the Ark tonight.
No, not tonight. All right, so it's raining. And we're reviewing movies here. It's Nick DiGilio. And by the way, I'll be back on my regular shift, back to normal, on Monday morning, 2 a.m., when my guest will be the great Jen Bosworth, who comes in to talk about a bunch of really cool stuff. And then she always interviews me. She turns the tables and interviews me when she comes in studio. Jen Bosworth is hilarious, and she'll be our guest on Monday morning. One more night off for Dan Shugru, my producer. So Dan Long, my producer, will be producing that show.
That's right.
Yeah. All right, man. All right, well, let's get back to the movies. Here's Colin. Hi, Colin.
Hello there.
And Eric. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
All right, listen, here's the what? Okay. we should probably review Life Itself.
Yeah.
All right. Yep. Colin, why don't you tell us about Life Itself?
Life Itself is the documentary about one of our own, Roger Ebert. And it is based on his memoir of the same title. And it was directed by Steve James, who Ebert often supported with films such as Hoop Dreams, The Interrupters, and Stevie. And James pretty much kind of takes the same kind of approach here. Steve James is the documentarian and the narrator and the friend. Basically kind of jumps back and forth between Ebert in his later stages of thyroid cancer in the days when he, towards the end when he was back in rehab for about the seventh time. And, looking at his life, from, being a newspaper reporter in college up through being, the co-host of the most popular movie review show in history. So there's a lot of stuff here with about Roger and Gene Siskel, the love story that, between Chaz and Roger, that is just, a beautiful thing. It's hard for film critics to review this without, some kind of personal bias in some way, especially here in Chicago. This man, we all knew him. We all loved him. He's a big part of why we're doing what we're doing. Nevertheless, this is a great film about a great person. It is just beautifully done. There's a narrator who reads from Ebert's book who sounds a lot like Roger Ebert, and this is the kind of thing that could make or break a documentary if it's done really poorly. But it's done really well here. It's hard not to be moved. If you've never seen Roger Ebert in his state, when his face got, disfigured. Some people I saw it in the theater with were pretty taken aback by that. But it's a moving film. I mean, it's absolutely, it gets everything right about this man, he got the movie he deserved, basically. So can't recommend it highly enough. Everybody should go see it or get it on demand. However you got to see it. It's great.
Yeah. By the way, it's at the Landmark Century Center, and it's in Highland Park at the Renaissance.
Yeah.
Those are the two theaters it's playing. Eric?
Yeah. I mean, this is more than just a posthumous tribute to a famous person. This is a film, we all, like Colin said, all of us in Chicago, all of us as film critics, we all know the film critic. But what this film does is make us want to get to know the man behind the film critic and the sort of this rise that he had to the position that he held for so long, and this really just truly sort of American journey that he really had, ups and downs, with alcoholism and, and obviously up into, the last decade of his life where he was, fighting cancer, and the love and the support that he had from Chaz during that time. This is as complete a documentary about a singular individual as you could possibly hope to have. It's the kind of thing that you hope that someone at your own funeral could give a eulogy, you know, just 5% of the power of this film. It's a beautiful film. It's a really funny film. Great interviews from filmmakers and people who knew Roger personally. It's one of the best films of the year. I don't care where the bias comes from. That's the fact.
Yeah, I thought it was great. And you know, I knew Roger, and as you guys did. And it's hard because Roy reviewed this earlier on the show. And he also knew Roger, and I've been going to the screenings and socializing with everybody in the screening room since 1985. I've been doing this, so I was you know there during the absolute height of their popularity, Gene and Roger's popularity, and so it's a different perspective when you're in this position. If you're just a person who didn't know Roger, read his reviews, or saw him on television, it's going to be a different experience for you. I do want to mention that the hospital sequences in this movie are absolutely devastating, and really hard to watch. They're really, really hard to watch. But having said that, I'm glad that you mentioned it's a funny movie, because there's a lot of funny stuff in this movie, and it's very entertaining and really well done. And Steve James just makes great documentaries, man. I mean, that's all there is to it. This is a perfect salute to Roger Ebert, and I think his family and friends should be really proud of it. I think Steve James should be really proud of it. I mean, he was friends with Roger. And the amount of people that he, when you watch this movie, the amount of people and celebrities and just people in general that were touched by Roger or affected by Roger in some way or another is astounding. It's absolutely astounding, the reach that this guy had. So sometimes it's a rough movie to watch. I don't want to, you know, the fact that Roger and Chaz let Steve James into that area, you know what I mean, and into that mm-hmm. world, says a lot about how much trust they both had in Steve James. So a great film. There's no question about it. It's one of the best movies of the year, and I know that the three of us probably sound biased, but I don't care. It's one of the best movies of the year about a great guy. So all right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, you guys can review the Ape movie.
Okay.
All right.
We'll take a quick break here on 720 WGN. All right, Nick DiGilio here, wrapping up the show and wrapping up the movie reviews. Let's get back to that. Here's Colin. And here's Eric. Eric, tell us about Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Okay. Well, this is the sequel to the prequel reboot from a few years ago, Rise of the Planet of the Apes. It's a few years after the end of that film. The simian flu that is now being referred to has wiped out most of Earth's population. The apes have taken up residence in the forest. They built a little society there. And there are still some human survivors, and they have made their own colony inside sort of a little place in San Francisco. And one day they sort of stumble upon each other. There's a group of humans led by Jason Clarke and Kerry Russell who know that there's a dam that's out inside the ape community that could keep the power on for, you know, at least a little bit longer for the humans, so they could continue enjoying things like light and things like that, and just all sorts of power. So this leads to sort of an uneasy truce between the apes and the humans. There are some on each side are very much afraid of the other. There are those that are calling for battle, for war, if you will. But others say, well, let's give peace a chance for a while. And that's all well and good, but we know that the peace is probably not going to last too long, as there's certainly good and bad on both sides of the equation. Rise of the Planet of the Apes, you know, really the first half of the movie dealt a lot with the humans sort of teaching the lead ape, Caesar, a lot of the qualities that they were learned to grow from the original series, Planet of the Apes, from 1968. And then the second half of the movie really dealt with the literal rise of the apes, really sort of getting to know you know, who these creatures were, and as we watch them learn not just the human qualities, but the qualities amongst themselves that would sort of grow them into an alliance so they could overtake the humans. So now you have this film, which is really very much a natural progression of the last half of that second film. The first 15, 20 minutes of this film deals solely with the ape culture. And you have Andy Serkis as Caesar, again, doing just remarkable motion capture work. It'd be stunning if this film did not win the special effect Oscar next year. This is a pretty terrific film, wonderfully directed by Matt Reeves. It's a really sort of tribute to this this Apes franchise. If there are any quibbles I might have, I forgot to mention Gary Oldman is also one of the humans, like many of the characters, there's a lot of ambiguity about exactly who's good and who's evil. I do have some quibbles, minor quibbles about the movie. There's a confrontation late in the movie that I think is not very well put together. It seems kind of hastily derived just to arrive at a conclusion late in the film. And also, if this movie is going to sort of evolve with the humans and the apes, they're going to have to try and find something to do for the women as well. Kerry Russell doesn't get to do much but play wet nurse. And even Caesar, who has a family now, even his wife just basically gets to sit around and have babies and be sick for most of the movie. Minor quibbles aside, this is one of the best films of the summer, and I'm very much looking forward to where it's going to go next.
All right, Colin?
Yeah, I agree. And it's not just Andy Serkis who's giving a great performance here with the motion capture. I mean, this is a movie that is just filled with characters who, are being... played by other actors who are doing amazing work. I'm really amazed. I'm just sort of in awe of what these movies, and what they can do with, performances of these kinds of characters. I mean, we saw it with Gollum and we saw it with King Kong. Not so much with Avatar because the actors themselves were so wooden, but there's a real, soul and humanity to these films that really elevates them beyond just summer blockbuster fare. This one is written by the same people who wrote The Rise of the Planet of the Apes. I think Matt Reeves does a great job of, not letting the action overwhelm everything else. I agree with some of the quibbles that Eric has. I do prefer Rise of the Planet of the Apes between the two, but not by much. This is a really... this is another really terrific, smart, well-put-together science fiction film. There's two of them out there, this and Snowpiercer, which people should go see, instead of going to see the stupid Transformers movie, which is stupid science fiction. This is definitely recommend it.
All right. I couldn't tell you how excited I am. I'm seeing it tomorrow. Seeing it tomorrow afternoon, and I couldn't be more excited. What do we got next week?
Next week we have Sex Tape. We have Planes, Fire and Rescue, and what we got? The Purge, Anarchy.
Oh, God.
I never saw The Purge 1, and I never saw Planes 1, because I thought, well, why should I? It's not like they're going to make sequels to them or anything.
Yeah, wow.
And especially a year later. Well, you missed two of the worst films of last year, Colin.
Oh,
so.
God.
All right.
All right. Thanks, you guys. I'll talk to you next week, and you'll be getting a text from me at around 6:30. Tomorrow.
Great.
All right.
All right. See you later.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
There you go. There's Colin and there's Eric, and they'll be back next week.